Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Welcome to the Box Set Pod. Tonight, Girls, part two. 2 weeks on the series Girls. And tonight, unlike the first part, we've actually got one of those things with us, a girl. Welcome. Yeah. Howell and Jamie here. We're both boys, and one girl who's from Kansas joins us. It's Mel. How are you, Mel?
I'm doing all right. How are you guys?
Very good. Look at this, a bona fide American girl, which is even better being as girls as an American TV series. Last week, Jamie threw the gauntlet down at the end of the podcast, saying that we needed Mel to join us this week, and she has picked up that gauntlet and thrown it back in his face. Now, you weren't keen on joining us for this, were you, Mel?
You know, I wasn't, because I watched the first episode of Girls when it premiered and did not care for it and never watched it again. I've kind of kept up with it, you know, as you do, just reading about TV shows and what's going on in
not
the world.
Not as you do. You're the only person I
as
know
you do.
Who keeps track.
As, yes.
Of
I've just through osmosis, you know, these things. You get to know all about shows. Like, I could tell you a lot about Supernatural. Never watched a single episode.
So weird.
Yeah. I wasn't really keen on it, and I didn't feel like I really had the street cred to talk about it, having. Mm-hmm. I mean, as we discussed, I thought I maybe had watched the first episode, but I couldn't remember for sure. Mm-hmm. But after watching it again, I did watch. I have seen it before.
So you have watched it again.
I did. I actually watched the first four episodes. Whoa. Per the Box Set Pod rules.
Wow. 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 Wow, that's so impressive.
Oh, wow.
Thank you, Mel.
Yeah.
Well, it's only 30 minutes an episode.
Yeah, it is short. That is a big plus point for the series straight away. You can chew them down quite quickly. Well, the reason you're here, Mel, is because you are a woman. And as we know, just like with black people, if you have a black person, they have to talk on behalf of all black people. You have to talk on behalf of all women. And that's the way the world works, I'm afraid. Particularly American ones. So, no, thank you. We don't expect you to represent everyone. But I think perhaps first, you should explain to us why we were wrong to be surprised that this wasn't in it. Forget about what you think of it now after four episodes, but when you first watched it and you were put off by it, we would have thought that you were perfect for it, a writer in America who would have been in her, if not 20s, certainly 30s at that point. And you said to us, oh, it's not for me, I'm not the target demographic kind of thing. What do you mean by that? Who's the target for it? Who was the target in your head?
The target demographic in my head was, you know, women who were in their 20s and were still trying to figure it out. Maybe not necessarily early 20s, like not the exact same age that girls were when the show started, but thereabouts. Mm. And, you know, I had to go back. I actually went back and looked up when this premiered, because I thought that might have given me some context as to why I was not into it. And oh, my, did it. Mm. Yes, Girls premiered in the middle of April, April 15th of 2012, which, and I'll try not to get into too much of the details here, but at that point in my life, I had recently been diagnosed with moderate to severe depression and begun treatment. Mm. I had just come through years of dealing with entitled Chuck fans.
Yeah.
Because the series had ended a few months previously. Those two things are not unrelated.
Yeah, I bet.
I mean, that's not the only reason that I needed therapy, but it was certainly a catalyst to getting me to finally go in and deal with some things. And also just a week before the series premiered, I had been informed that the funding for my job at the university where I worked at the time was not going to be renewed.
Wow.
Due to budget cuts.
Wow.
So I was really not in the mood to watch four women be entitled, self-absorbed, and make a bunch of poor choices about their lives.
Yeah.
I was just not in a place where that was entertaining
to
me.
No.
So, yeah, when I saw that premiere date, a big old light bulb popped on over my head.
It's funny because a lot of people...
had a lot working against it.
It's funny because a lot of people have said that... my relationship with Chuck demands that I seek therapy as well. So it's quite interesting.
It's not Chuck itself. It was the fandom, but that's an entirely podcast.
No, I think that's a very interesting subject. And if you've, I don't know, in some small way, it's probably similar to where I am in life at the moment, where you ride something that's quite hectic. Jamie and I had quite a hectic decade there that seemed to fly by, and then when the landscape changes very quickly, and similar to then for you, at the moment there's kind of a lot of budget cutbacks and life isn't as easy as it always has been, kind of thing. It can certainly change your relationship with that kind of program, and I've said on this podcast a lot that I like happy things with happy endings, and I enjoyed Chuck a lot. I think the difference with this now, and we'll find out if it's the same with you, is that it's very different now looking, being able to look back at people who are that age and recognize myself in it, rather than looking at it while you're going through it and going, why would I? It's a bit like people who are doctors saying, well, I'm not going to watch ER. Why would I go home and watch ER? You know? Why would I want to watch this shit that I've put up with all day, you know? So I'm wondering how different it is now for you. Looking back at those characters, do you see them in a different light? Is it easier for you, your relationship with the series?
I feel like my moment has passed for Girls. I really do, because I'm now watching it and I feel myself kind of inching into, you know, hey kids, get off my lawn territory. I just have no patience for these people. I know a lot has been written about how these characters are unlikable on purpose. You're not supposed to like these people.
Yeah.
And that's the point of it, because aren't we all just miserable little pricks in our 20s, in our early 20s? I mean, we just... But I am still at a point where I'm just like, I have no patience for this. I am more interested in the characters, though. I will say that I am more, because I did go on and watch all the first four episodes, and I may continue to watch. I don't know. But it feels a little bit like a little sadomasochistic, you know, to keep watching, because I mean, Hannah's relationship with Adam, I just want to shake her. Except I think you get off of that, so that probably isn't going to be productive.
Well,
but that's a miserable, horrible, horrible relationship. And that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot to unpick there. So our quest on this podcast is to see if we can persuade you to continue. Because I think even in what you've just said, even using that as an example, Adam and Hannah's relationship certainly changes, and your view on what is good for Hannah changes, and your view on him changes. That's one of the things that I think is great about it. But I just want to talk about something more fundamental, and you and I discussed it when we were doing the Gilmore Girls special. Something that I noticed in the reaction to the Gilmore Girls revival, and to catch Jamie up here, one of the key characters, Rory Gilmore, has an entirely unsympathetic storyline in the in the revival. So there's been a huge backlash of people saying she's making just awful decisions. There is nothing to like about her in these decisions she's making, and it's unrealistic that she would make these decisions. Something Mel and I discussed, I was like, no, I totally buy it. I think people reach points in their life where they do make a cataclysmic set of decisions over a couple of years.
Absolutely. And where Rory was at that point, absolutely. And I drew that parallel between, and when I was watching these episodes,
did you?
I drew that parallel between how I was feeling about these women and how I felt about, you know, Rory, and that I was far more understanding with Rory.
Okay.
I think because we grew up with her, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
We know that she's a good person at heart. We've seen that she's got a good head on her shoulders. I have no frame of reference for these characters. Well, I met them when they were 23, 24.
That was kind of the point I was going to make, was that I got this sense that perhaps there's a cultural difference between American audience and a British audience. Maybe not, but the thing that shocked me most with the Gilmore Girls feedback was the idea that characters should be aspirational. Like, for me, Rory's story was just a great story, even if she was being a dick. Whether you think she was depressed or being a dick, that's still a story. And I think that there was a great sense of disappointment. And it's almost a religious thing. It's almost like what we want is a, or what the that audience want is for our characters to be redemptive, to always be redemptive, and to be to be held up on a pedestal that says that we should aspire to be like these people. Almost a kind of Catholic or Methodist even, or Christian sort of view of entertainment that says, well, we should not be watching people who lead us into temptation or who aren't inspirational. And so my point was going to be, you know, are you holding these people to that standard? But I think the more interesting point is the one that you've just made, which is, are you watching this and going, okay, why don't I imagine that I saw Hannah as a 13-year-old growing up through that? Are you building a sympathetic backstory to her in order for you to get beyond your American penchant for redemptive characters?
Not yet, because honestly, to me, she's acting like a 13-year-old.
Okay.
When we meet her, she is a spoiled only child teenager.
Is there not an argument, though, Jamie, do you agree with this, that actually what Lena Dunham's done here is that if we were to draw ourselves into characters, this is what you'd see. That she's actually drawn a realistic depiction of all of us. Nobody is as pure as Rory Gilmore pre.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you're comparing these characters as far as realism, you know, an actual person who would exist in the world, Hannah is far more likely than Rory. Although I was a Rory, so
yeah.
I'm going to be the exception to the rule.
Yeah.
But and I know that that's what Lena Dunham is going for. She's going for a realistic depiction of women of her generation. And I think she achieved it, but that does not make it easier for me to watch.
But what makes it a comedy, I think, more as time goes on, is that as you're watching it, you go, Lena Dunham is saying, look at the contradictions that we have in our character. All of us have contradictions. And the comedy, I think more and more to some degree, comes from us going, oh, what a car crash of a decision to make that we all could make. Am I explaining this well, James? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think I do. I think there's nothing that you've said, Mel, that I disagree with whatsoever. You know, it's in the initial episodes of Girls, I felt exactly the same. I was like, I don't like Hannah. I think her boyfriend's a psycho. And I think all the other characters around her are really annoying and self-absorbed. And I'm not sure if I'm going to continue watching. I'd say watching Girls, it's almost like I go through waves of, through the series. I've gone through waves of going, oh, do I really want to carry on with this? And then I've gone, there'll be an amazing episode where I'll just go, oh, that's why I really like this show, where it's really captured the essence of, like, just really funny laughing at these characters and the situations they get themselves in, or there's a really poignant moment that they managed to capture because of the reality, like you say, how the reality of the world that's created. She does capture some really lovely, like, poignant moments, but, you know, there is a lot of, like, sort of annoying, watching annoying people in New York that you have to get through. That's a tough thing to do. And especially for your pond, you know, you don't like that particular type of show.
Talk to me about what happens, because again, I've only watched the first four episodes. So we've ended with that devastating moment where Marnie's boyfriend is on stage and sings a song called Hannah's Diary.
Which is just a funny situation. That's funny.
Oh my gosh, it was not funny. I did not find that funny. I found it incredibly awkward and not funny. I'll grant that humor is subjective, so I have yet to find anything funny in this series after four episodes. Yeah.
Well, really? So you've not found any, not laughed at all in the four episodes?
No. Uh-uh. I've been told that Hannah is a funny writer, but I've yet to witness it myself.
Okay. Then here's a piece of advice first, is that I felt like that about Girls the first time I watched it, and then Sarah and I have watched we're up to date, like we watched the entire thing in the last 3 weeks, so we've just gone round again. And something that I've found watching it together with somebody is that when you begin to laugh, like when you begin to go, Lena Dunham is making a joke, then it becomes funnier and funnier. So you go, I criticised Catastrophe a couple of weeks ago because I was saying that I don't like it when writers cast themselves when they could be better actors. Well, one of the things that Lena Dunham is a really good actor, and she's playing the part so well and so realistic that actually it could almost benefit from being worse played. It could benefit from being signalled that this is a comedy, like a little bit more, because when you begin, you know what it's like when you can watch a comedy with one person and there not be a laugh, and you can watch it with someone else and you can snowball more and more laughter. It depends what you bring to it. Well, I think that's the case with this, but that said, even as a drama, you were saying what happens? Well, that there is a, there is a characteristic of Hannah that you have no idea about yet, which is introduced in season 2. And
spoil it for me. I don't care.
I don't. It's not you that I'm worried about. It's anyone else listening. Oh. She has a particular mental. Is it a disorder or a foible? I'm not sure. It might be a disorder. I suppose it's a disorder. And we don't learn about that until a really well played, not funny, but really well played expose of that in the second series. And also you meet her parents more, and you get a sense of everybody's backstory a little bit more, which perhaps allows you to become more sympathetic with them. And that certainly with Hannah, you know, the number of times in that first series that I said to Sarah, she's a dick, isn't she? It's like, yeah, she is. And now, you know, at the end of all of this, even though there are elements of her being a dick, I would, you know, step in front of traffic for it because I think she's brilliant. She still has the propensity to be an absolute dick, but you know.
Yeah, I think that, like, with her writing, with Lena Dunham, it's very easy for her characters and her writing and her comedy and the drama as well to veer on the side of just being, this is annoying and I don't like it, and indulgent at times. You feel
indulgent
like that.
Indulgent is definitely the word. That,
yeah, big yeah. time. And so she doesn't always get it right. Like, you know, she's throwing all of this at the wall, and some sticks. And in the first series, some of the good stuff does stick and does, like, work. And gradually, more and more of it works as the series go on. So what I mean is, like, Hannah is a character. There's in season, like, 3 or something like that, there's an episode where, because even though you still don't really always like her, you're kind of engaged in her journey and you understand her more and more. So there's a scene where she goes to a writing school in the middle of nowhere, and where she's with all these other pretentious writers that are quite similar to her, and she just lays into them. She just absolutely slags them all off. And it's one of the funniest scenes. And it kind of like, it's one of the first times where you sort of, one of the first times I felt like I was really on her side and enjoying watching her behavior just puncture these personalities around her. And there's moments like that, and you get more of those moments as you go along with her, because, and the other characters, and some characters you start to really, really engage with. I've forgotten the name of the her ex-boyfriend who's gay. I've forgotten his
Elijah.
Name.
Oh, he's great.
He's brilliant. Oh, I mean, yeah.
I like that actor a lot.
He's
so good. And by the final series, he's my favourite character in the show. I think he's brilliant.
I would argue, though, that by the final series, he's behaving like the biggest dick of anybody.
The last episode I saw, he was...
Let's take a brief moment to welcome live from London, from the S&M Palace, it's Matthew Wandlers.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, Matt.
I'll just put down my flogger and my manacles.
That you're screaming out here in the background.
You won't hear them. They're all gagged.
Oh. Yeah. Muffled screams then.
Matthew, just to catch you up.
This is taking a turn for the worse.
Yeah, well, it always does. Mel has watched 4 episodes of Girls. She didn't like it originally many years ago. She doesn't particularly like the characters. We're here to persuade her to continue. That's kind of where we are. And just before we get Matthew's opinion on it, I'll just say this, Mel. One of the firmest things that I can say about this is that if you trust Lena, she's going to take you from 20s to 30s. And she said she couldn't do it any further than the 30s. Matt's cat's going.
Because that's how old she is.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Just
to quickly go back, it sounds like you were telling me that we start to see Hannah moving from...
Matt, could you breathe less heavily, please?
So
Sorry.
Thank you.
From self-absorbed to self-aware, is that what maybe that...
Oh,
that
well, yeah.
Yes.
That scene at the writer's retreat, is that kind of what you're talking about?
A little bit, but... Okay.
Certainly over the
very,
series.
Very, yeah, and it's a very slow process. You know, her development as a character and as a person in the show is very slow. But, yeah, she does see and maybe not so much in herself as much as in the people around her. She's good at sort of seeing the ridiculousness of the people around her and highlighting it and she is frustrating still as it goes on, but she does sort of like endear you to her because you sort of see the wit and the genuine earnestness that she kind of goes into everything. That carries you quite a long way. And it's worth sticking with for that.
Well, I think that's kind of what the whole thing's about, is self-awareness, isn't it? And versus self-indulgence.
Because there is a lot of comedy that is about laughing at them, laughing at how terrible these characters are and how ridiculous they are.
Yeah.
You spend a lot of time just going, they're fools, they're, you know, they are.
But Matt.
Yes.
Do you like Girls?
Very much.
And what about the series?
Yes, very much. I think it's excellent. I really do.
How did you feel at the beginning when you were a couple of episodes in?
I liked it from the start. Yeah.
Oh, right.
Really? What appealed to you at the beginning?
Pretty much everything about it.
I mean,
listening to last week's pod, I was dismayed at how much he focused on the sex scenes, because I felt like I was at a meeting of the Mary Whitehouse Club.
Matt, hashtag dismayed, Matt. You can't say that this is usual in a comedy.
No, I don't think it is, but that doesn't mean it's
bad.
I
didn't say it was bad.
And I don't think this is a comedy. This isn't just a traditional, like, this should not be compared to something like Kimmy Schmidt, which is an out-and-out, played-for-laughs, this is about gags.
Yeah, I think we acknowledge that those are two different things, but she is a comedy writer.
No, the show is funny. That doesn't mean it's a comedy.
Okay. We're going to have to disagree.
I feel like this is going to be a different sort of discussion.
This is a debate. That's an interesting point.
Yeah.
I think if anything, that like this show is more like something. It's like a really souped up Hollywoodized version of This Life, or Queer as Folk, or something like that. It's in that kind of vein where it's just it's really studying a demographic and a sort of modern phenomenon. And
you from are a aware very, that Judd Apatow is the producer of this.
I know, but
that doesn't make it a comedy.
It's not trying to be a comedy. You couldn't put it in that genre. I don't think it's right to pigeonhole it like that.
Doesn't it compete in the Emmys as a comedy? Yes, it's always submitted as a comedy.
Because it's a comedy, because they call it a comedy. Even Wikipedia calls it a comedy.
But it's not funny.
It's a comedy drama.
It is funny.
We said it is a comedy drama. It is.
Well, yes, but everyone feels the need to pigeonhole something, and it's pointless, and particularly the Emmys with their silly categories.
But it's not the Emmys. It's them. It's Judd Apatow, who makes comedies, and Lena Dunham, who talks about it as a comedy. It is a comedy. It's a comedy drama.
All right, fine. All right, I'm not going to keep talking about it because it's pointless. But the things that appeal to me about it instantly are, first of all, I think the writing is fantastic. I think it's better than most things out there. Like I don't know if everyone's up to speed on the current series.
Me and Jamie.
The last episode I watched was where she goes to visit this writer that she's written a column about.
Yeah.
And it's just a fantastic duologue. Like the whole thing is so strong.
Yeah. Amazing.
And it's a really nice intellectual debate. Yeah, like, I don't see how you can sit there and call that episode a comedy.
Are you joking? So there is no to you in that episode, and we can't go into specifics because we don't want to ruin it. But as a dark comedy, that episode does not build to the point where there is a very clear gag, which is also twisted and weird, but a gag.
I don't see that personally. Have you ever laughed at The West Wing?
West Wing doesn't call itself a comedy. This one does. It's not my words, Matt. It's the words of the people who made the program.
Anyway, we're still getting stuck on this meaningless point. But
listen. All of these things. This is quite an important thing.
Howell, you're right. It's a comedy.
Okay, thanks.
It's a comedy.
Ed, listen. The reason I think that this is an important thing is that I was saying to Mel just before you came on. When you do watch this, if you struggle with the darkness and with the unlikability of the characters and stuff, if you do take a step back and if you listen to any interviews with the producer or the writer about this, that what they're very much trying to do is a traditional comedy, which is told in a very dramatic, very real, very character study rich way, which is often the basic structure of you get a character and you throw more and more shit at them until there is a climax, until there's a point at which something ridiculous happens that you wouldn't have been able to buy at the beginning of an episode. It gets more and more, you know, difficult or farcical, and that for me is what I realized this time round. When Mel watched it the first time, she was in a different state of mind. Jack enjoyed it because he is that age and he recognised it. But I'm watching it now going, oh, what a brilliant, unique way of writing a comedy, which then the writer of Love has said she wished she'd written. Was it Love, Jamie, last week?
Transparent. Oh, Transparent, yeah.
Yeah, Jill
also
Soloway.
Also not a comedy.
Yeah.
Also not a comedy. but that's partly why I really enjoy it, is because there is no... I can't think of a comedy that is quite like this. And that's her...
That's interesting, isn't it? It's almost like it's not a comedy.
I'll just send you the link.
It's almost like it's something different. that doesn't have a category yet.
Unbelievable. Only okay.
Anyway, what is it that you find so detestable about the characters? Anyone?
Mel has to answer that.
Oh, okay. Well, at the risk of repeating myself, I just find them insufferable. They're not people I would want to spend any time with. They remind me of people that I knew at that age who I chose not to spend time with because they're so self-absorbed and intent on making these poor choices and just pretentious as fuck. Oh my gosh. I cannot stand these kinds of people. And I, you know, you were talking about Hannah becoming more endearing, and I see that absolutely in these first four episodes. I see that element there. And she's one of the reasons that I might continue watching, is because I do find myself drawn to what's going to happen to her next, what's she going to do. But at the same time, I don't want to watch her make more bad decisions than I know that she's going to.
Well, is that?
I've always really liked the character of Hannah in particular, because she's a self-deprecating klutz kind of thing. I find her really lovable, and despite any. I mean, I don't particularly find her pretentious. I think she's. I mean, it's been a while since I've seen Series 1, so I can't remember what she's like in that initial part. But I think she's trying to be truthful as a writer, and I think that can seem pretentious.
She's less pretentious than the people around her, and that might be what makes it so glaring.
Right.
Because she's got this British. They're not actually related, right? Jessa and Shoshana are the two.
They're cousins. Okay.
Yeah.
So, but she's got Jessa's there, and she's, oh my god, I cannot handle that character.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
Jessa, so obvious actually.
That she's completely insecure.
Yeah.
And you know, but they all let her get away with it, and they all let her make them feel insecure. And, you know, Shoshana is just so desperate and needy.
Yeah.
And Marnie is so selfish.
Yeah.
But I think they all go through such a rich tapestry of existence in the series. Like they try so many different things. That's one of the things I love about it, is it's so, it's just full of experience. It's full of people trying different things and trying to figure out what they like and what they don't like, and not being afraid to experiment, fail, enjoy. They're experimenting with being cruel, with being arrogant, with being self-absorbed, with being empathetic, with being giving, and. I think that's one of the best things about it. It's just it's got so much going on throughout the series.
So you, Matt, never shouted, "Oh my god, she's a dick!" about that character.
About which one?
About Hannah.
No, I've always really liked her. I mean, she can make bad decisions, but I think they're real decisions, and I don't think. I don't think the show shies away from that. I think it sort of embraces that, her ineptitude it's about finding your way, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is. But you're the first person. I think it does it
more truthfully and accurately than most anything I've seen.
This podcast needs a psychoanalysis of everybody involved, I think, based on this series. You're the first person I've ever spoken to who doesn't talk about that character as incredibly kind of annoying at first. And
it's an interesting thing as well, because in the second series, I think it is, when they sort of really delve into her OCD.
Mm.
And she does become very, very difficult to like.
There you go, Matt.
In fact,
it's OCD.
Appreciate that, Matt.
I was just really cryptic earlier about what it was, so that I didn't spoil the second series for
her. Oh, sorry.
I asked him to spoil me, and he wouldn't do it. So.
Okay. Yeah. But it's really interesting, because OCD is a thing that people kind of... it's a term that's bandied around a lot and used very incorrectly.
Yeah.
And it's a very serious thing. You know, it can really cripple your existence. I have a friend, a playwright, who wrote who is a OCD and wrote a thing about it, and it drove him to the brink of madness, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it does the same with Hannah, and it's a really sort of fascinating thing to watch.
Yeah.
Particularly when you see people trying to support her, it's like watching someone with an addiction. That's what it feels tantamount to.
Well, Lena Dunham has it, and I think, again, it's tantamount to her ability to, her acting ability is phenomenal, and that's one of the things I said last week, that it had taught me things, this series, and that is one of the things, that whole process of going in and out of OCD is just so well placed and well performed, because she could have done it badly, even if she has got it, and she did it really well.
Yeah, she did.
It's brilliant. Sorry, I'm just half concentrating because I'm reading an interview with Judd Apatow and Lena Dunham about writing comedy together for girls.
Looking for evidence, yeah.
Absolutely.
The other thing that really that I enjoyed about it was watching Adam Driver kind of grow into his, watching that character come more into its own.
Yeah.
Because I remember, like, the first few episodes looking at this guy going, wow, how is this guy on television?
He's repulsive.
He looks like a troll that you'd find under a bridge.
Yeah.
But then by the end of series three, he's somehow incredibly handsome.
Yeah, I mean, and this is one of the things I was saying to Mel there. At the moment, Mel's at the point of, like, why is Hannah touching this person, and what a freak. And he is, he's just so disgusting as a character, I think, to begin with. And then you realise who they're kind of represent. That character sort of becomes a hero in certain moments, a villain at
all. Yeah, absolutely,
But it's almost
the way that he reacted when she told him that she had HPV.
Yeah.
I can't remember how he reacted. He says, oh, I'm so sorry. Because she's having a meltdown because she's like, I'm going to get cervical cancer and die.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And he says, I'm so sorry, and gives her this big hug.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, wait a minute.
There's your window.
This is why she keeps coming back.
There's your window. And if you were to look at the, you know, we're in an age at the moment very, very conscious of I almost feel like I'm saying the wrong thing when I say this, very conscious of political correctness in a good way. And what that character almost becomes for me is, at points, is almost the best feminist portrayed, because there's so many contradictions in all of the characters, that in his character you get somebody who's entirely, what you see is what you get, you can predict what he's going to do, and he's entirely fair with everybody based on his kind of worldview. In a way, he's the most together character of anybody in the series, you know. Did anyone else feel that about that character? Maybe not. The last couple of series things have kind of changed a bit because you feel like he's lost his way a little bit, but there's a certain trustworthiness and solidity that you can rely on from him, where you think he's going to be the hero.
There's definitely that, because he's very he's incredibly single-minded and truthful, and that's his shtick, you know.
Yeah,
like you can't imagine him lying to someone, but you can imagine him being absolutely brutal with the truth as well.
He's a sociopath, so he judges everybody in a way which is completely devoid of whatever social norms are. He has his way of judging people, which is really refreshing, to the point that there's the end of it, one of the two first couple of series, there's the end where he's running, and I'm not going to say any more than that, but it's one of the best endings to a series I've ever seen. The tears were falling from my eyes. Maybe, but they should have been if they weren't. It's got some of the best moments in it, and there's definitely ups and downs, Mel. If unlike Matt, who obviously is as pretentious as the characters, which is why he hasn't got a problem with it, but unless you're Matt and you've come at it finding it quite difficult to begin with, it's I understand that there's ups and downs, but it really does have kind of a depth and a gold mine of moments and perspectives that you just can't get from any other comedy drama.
Yeah. Well, I'm certainly intrigued after listening to a group of men extol the virtues of this show.
and Matt's
where I
sorry, my cat really likes it as well.
I like your cat is an excellent character on this podcast. Go on, Matt.
I'm wondering. I wish Marcia was here because I'm wondering if this is a case of I haven't seen the entire series, therefore you guys are able to come at it from a more you have a more holistic approach, having seen what are they on now? Six?
Six.
Or if it's that.
No, I mean, we had to get that
gone
far
through this as a female. I have a different perspective than you do as males, where some of this stuff seems endearing to you. Having gone through it myself with female friends, it is not endearing.
Well, certainly having watched the entire thing with my wife, she, the remote control is firmly in her hands. So
is it?
Yeah, she has to be signed up. And I do get the difficulties to begin with, but at the same time, you know, Marcia brought up the sex scenes as well. She didn't listen to last week. The reason we talked about sex last week so much is because most people that Jamie and I have talked to about this, certainly over the years, do bring up the sex scenes because they are so unique in the sense that they're quite frequent and they're quite awkward and they're quite...
They are very awkward, aren't they? There's no soft lighting and, you know, swelling music. Is this okay with you?
But that's kind of what
how
she
do you
set
want me
out.
To be, you know?
Yeah, that's what Lena Dunham set out to do, though, with that, was go, we don't see real sex on TV. We see stupid, soft focus sheets hiding.
Exactly, and that's what sex is like in your 20s. Everyone's trying to figure out how to do it.
Did you have sex in your 20s? Jesus. yeah, it is like that. But I think... Jamie's point the week before last when he mentioned it, which I kind of get, is that there's a lot of it. There's just a lot. Not being Mary Whitehouse, it's just being critical. I'd go, you know, if that annoying British character was in it too much, I'd go, yeah, I get the point with her now. Why is she in it too much? But it's kind of a... It feels like, because it's so unusual, it feels like a device that is used... a great deal, you know. It stands out,
but it's challenging, and it's progressive, and it makes us think about it in a different and more. Well, I keep saying it. I feel like a wanker. A more truthful way. It's you know that no one in their 20s has sex like you see it in films.
You're absolutely right. But what my point is that when you're conscious of that point that you've just made, that it's challenging when it. After you've seen it four times, it isn't challenging anymore. And you go, and I just wonder whether there's a few too many sex scenes where, okay, if we lived in a world where this wasn't challenging, does the story actually need it? Because it happens a lot. I'm like, okay, they're having sex now and we're going to watch them having sex and it'll be awkward. It feels a bit one tone of like...
Okay, I don't think that's true. I think it definitely is necessary because it tells you an awful lot about the... there's so much nuance in there about the way the two of them feel about each other, and it's another way of showing you how the relationship exists. Because it uses an aspect
for the character,
which a lot of other shows don't get to because they won't do that stuff. You only see them, you know, with their clothes on. You don't see what it's like when they're completely intimate with each other.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I agree on that.
I think I do agree to an extent because I think you're right. I think a lot of the 90% of the time the sex scenes make a really good sort of character or plot point or whatever. But there are times where I've just gone, I get it. I get what this character is. I get his relationship with that character. I understand that this dynamic's weird and that's why they're doing, you know, I don't need to have it like hammered home, you know, as much at times. But then that's...
Why does it matter? Why should that be the thing that we fixate on and not how many scenes there are in a coffee house or how many times use a cool piece of music to do something? Why is this thing so unwelcome?
I think because they don't use anything else that's so clearly a device as much. You don't notice a scene in a coffee house. You're almost saying part of life, just like talking, is sex. So if you see five scenes talking, what's wrong with seeing five scenes sex? Just because less happens in sex. So it,
but that's clearly not true. This show's got it's got stuff in it which is hilarious,
yeah,
and shocking and uncomfortable, and it's the full gamut of the experience, you know.
Don't know, I feel over gamuted sometimes.
Yeah, see, it's still having only watched the first four episodes. I did have to turn the volume down and close my windows because my neighbors were outside. Well, what was it? I think it was the you took me off the streets and I'm 11 and you're going to send me home. That scene, I think, is what was on. And I was like, all right, these are new neighbors. And you had to shut my windows and
you turn see, down that, the volume. That's a great example of what of a scene that I wouldn't remove. You know,
And that's what I'm saying is I learned so much about Hannah's character through in the sex scenes that I've seen with her.
Yeah, yeah, totally. It's just after series. I think sometimes they sometimes it's, just begin.
It's not old for me yet.
I'm sure there's like four episodes that begin with a sex scene that could just be copied and pasted. I don't learn anything new about them. Whereas I do in the coffee shop. There's different coffee shop scenes, you know.
Different sex scenes.
Maybe I'm looking at the wrong parts, literally. Who knows? Well, Matt's a complete convert. I mean, Jamie and I are converts as well, but it took us longer. Go on.
There was a dip for me. There was a dip, and I can't remember exactly where it was. I think it was in series four.
I was going to say.
Where the show got a bit self-indulgent, and I was just getting a bit bored with it.
I had that. There's an episode of the wedding episode, I think.
Yeah, the wedding episode. That's exactly what it was.
I was just like, oh my God, I'm sick to death of these characters now. And I got to that point, and I just found it really frustrating. But,
shit, but it wasn't until series four.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah, I can't remember exactly when.
Yeah.
Mel.
No, but I mean, I'm just saying that's pretty impressive that it was series four before you were tired of these characters.
Yeah.
And then it brought me straight back as well.
I wonder if you. I mean, Mel. One of my favourite episodes is the wedding episode. I just want to tell you. I just think it's superb.
Okay, that's not what I just heard.
Matt and Jamie didn't like the wedding episode. I liked it, but I wonder whether part of why that is one of the very few episodes where we go out of camera, out of the usual setting. We're in another place. And I enjoyed it. I think there's a great scene involving a pond, which I enjoyed very much. But
I think we're talking about different episodes. I'm talking about the one where Jessica gets married.
God, I don't even remember. Oh, yes, got you. But then that's... Yeah, okay. But that guy, the Irish guy, who's in lots of things...
Chris O'Dowd
is... I mean, what you lose with him in
Chris
that
O'Dowd,
scene.
He's amazing.
He is amazing.
He was awful in Girls. He's awful in Girls.
Oh.
As in his character is terrible or he's a bad actor?
No, I remember thinking, who the fuck is this guy? when we were in it, because I'd never seen him in anything before. And I didn't like the IT crowd, and I didn't recognize him from that, but then I did. And I was like, oh, why have they got this shit guy? And then I saw him in Bridesmaids, and I thought, oh, cool, you know, you're brilliant. Okay, good.
Yeah. Yeah, looking back, he's better than perhaps when you first watched it. He's certainly one of the more ridiculous characters, but you also get a sense that maybe that's where if you were a girl rather than a boy, Matt, if you were a girl rather than a very reasonable, polite boy that you are, you might have come across these jerks more often. I've got a feeling that those characters actually exist in.
Ian. I had no problem with the character. I thought he was bad in it.
Oh dear. Well, I enjoyed the first time we meet him. I thought that scene was just very, very funny. And perhaps
I can't remember it now.
Going back to his flat, three of them.
No, I'm not going to remember it because it's a long time ago. But I just remember that both me and Hannah, my wife, sorry, but we're just like, why is this guy in it? Everyone's so good in this show, and who is this douche?
Right. Well. Yeah, I think that's one of the most sitcom-y moments when we first meet him, actually, in a bar, and then it feels a little bit less of the realism that we've kind of built up, I think.
That's what I mean, that whole scenario felt very tacked on to the rest of the show.
Yeah, I mean, it's just tough when you're making a comedy to avoid that throughout six series, I think. I think that's the problem.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
any final points? Mel, are you going to continue yet, or do you need a final crack of the bat?
You know what? I'm going to have you guys give me a final crack here. I've already made my decision, but let's see.
Matt,
you can
number one reason to continue watching Girls.
I think it's a completely unique show. I think it's a very important show. And
I don't think you should class it as a show. Just want to say that.
No, true. It's not a show. It's something else. A visual experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
A visual and aural experience. Visual, aural, and oral experience.
Yeah, sorry. Did you have any more to that sentence? It's complete.
No, I don't really know how to describe what I think is important about it. It's just, I just think it's brilliant, and it should just be enjoyed.
Yeah, I'll second that, and add that within that, I think it's Lena Dunham, who is now, I'm sure, quite miserable at being asked to kind of defend or represent feminism in loads of interviews and stuff. It's kind of, she's the go-to person to go, am I allowed to ask this question to a woman? I think she actually explores both feminist as a show. It is one of the best explorations of feminism, but also just female characters and comedy characters, which is one of the reasons I love it. It's one of the best explorations of that, which includes, right up until this last series, the episode Matt was talking about, some amazing debates, male-female debates, in all of their hypocrisy and in all of their kind of hypocrisy.
All of the difficulty as well. That episode was particularly good because it shows how difficult things are.
Exactly. And I think it just explores that stuff really, really well. Jamie?
You know what? It's great to watch it from the point of view, Mel, of going, I'm so glad I'm not in my 20s and going through all this shit anymore. You can just sit there for six seasons. You can go, oh, my God, I'm glad those days are gone.
Yeah, it was like, God,
there is a character who tells Hannah, you could not pay me enough to be 24 again.
Yeah.
That so nurse, when she goes in to get tested.
It's so true, and it reminds you that whilst none of us feel like we know what we're doing in life, it really was very hard in your 20s, and you completely forget it, because you get through it on kind of desperate determination, and it just shows them stabbing in whatever direction they can stab, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's the sell.
Because it'll make you feel better about your life, is what Jamie's saying. And I'll also just add that it feels like you're going to be stuck in this world, but there is development and it moves, and you constantly learning new things or questioning things that you thought before, and that's one of the pleasures of it. I think the characters really do have arcs, not necessarily arcs, but certainly swirls and arcs, and go in weird directions and stuff. She's really nice.
Well, despite all of your comments there at the end, I am going to continue to watch.
Excellent. We'll check in with you again.
I'm going to at least finish the first season and see where we're at.
Great.
Because I've read some of Lena Dunham's writing. I've read some of her Lenny newsletters.
Yeah.
And I do like her writing for the most part. She still makes mistakes.
Yeah,
that's part of learning, and she usually owns up to them and tries to get better and make to learn and do better, which I appreciate. So I'm willing to do the same with regards to her show.
One of the articles about this comedy says that it shares its DNA closest with Curb Your Enthusiasm, in that the writer, the relationship between the writer and the actor. But I will say this as a final point. I think that I can't think of a series that is better where the actor is also the writer. Can anyone think of one?
Mm-mm.
Not better, no. But I'm a big fan of 30 Rock.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good point. Well, wonderful. Thank you, everybody. And what should we discuss next week? Who knows? I've just started Broadchurch. I've just finished Broadchurch season one, and I've just started on season two.
I feel like someone has opinions.
Either that, or he's just unleashed some weapon in the S&M dungeon.
That's what I think about Butcher.
Season one as well, Matt.
All of it is. God, I can't stand shows like that.
Okay, okay. Yeah, whodunits. And I might be defending a whodunit, which would be a new thing.
Were you ever able to find Blackish?
No. No.
I haven't tried it. I'm going to start American Crime Story tonight, The People versus O.J. Simpson.
Oh,
you lucky guy.
Great, great.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Let's do that.
Yeah, let's do that next week if we can. If you've got any suggestions or emails, email us.
I won't be around next week.
Matt won't be around next week, but you can.
I'm going to be at Centre Parks. Woo! Hey. Other Centre Parks are available.
It's like a shit Disney World in a forest, Mel. Studio@theboxsetpod.com. I don't mean that about Centre Parks. It's one of...
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
The happiest holidays I've ever had in my life. That was just comedic before I get sued by Sherwood Forest.